and welcome to Travel Fun. My name is Mary Beth Clementi, and I am the host of this talk show on travel. And this week, I have John Girona in the studio. John is a longtime Telluride local. He is a chef, a caterer, and the owner of a new restaurant in Mountain Village called The Village Table. And I'd like to welcome John Girona to Travel Fun. Hi, John.
Hi, Mary Beth. Really nice to be here in the Kodo Studios.
Yes, well, this is a familiar place to you. You are one of Kodo's beloved DJs.
I fill in occasionally. It's been a few months now since I opened the restaurant, but the name of my show is Why Not Radio, and I turned on my daughter to radio as well, who started the high school show, Nina, it's a really exciting place to be. I love Kodo.
Well, just to talk about your show, one of the things I like about it is it's always an eclectic mix of music from around the world. And that's really so much of what you're about.
That is what I'm about. Very international background. And, you come into the studio here and there's music from all over. So why not, why not radio? Why not pick music from all over and educate people, I guess.
Before we talk about your diverse cultural background, I'd like to talk a little bit about you and your Telluride experience, how long you've been living in Telluride, what brought you here.
Sure. So I moved here November 3rd, as a matter of fact. I've still got my bank deposit. I moved to town with $500 in an old Ford and made it happen here.
And what was the year?
1987. So 1987, moved here with a couple of high school friends. One of them was a ski racer, and they were both skiers. I had skied a very little bit back east in Pennsylvania and Hunter Mountain, New York State. And they said, why don't you come out for a winter to Telluride? And, I'd never heard of Telluride. Nobody had ever heard of Telluride. And they said, come spend the winter with us. We've got this great little condo we rented down at the Fall Line. They were pretty new back then. And I said, sure, okay, I'll come out. And we drove in at midnight. It was pitch black. The valley, you couldn't see a thing. And I woke up the next morning and looked up at Ajax and said, this is where I want to live. This is the place I'm going to stay. And
wow,
so I knew right away. It was
like
that very first day. I decided right away, I have to live here. And so that was it. My friends left after the season, but I stayed and worked at La Marmotte with Bertrand and Noel.
And so you already had culinary experience at that point?
I had a lot of, almost 10 years at that point, working in really great restaurants in New York City and French Culinary Institute and I worked in a soup kitchen, volunteering, and did apprenticeships, and had traveled a lot to Europe and all over the world to learn about food. And
your culinary training, I believe, was at the CIA?
No, French Culinary Institute, which is now called the International Culinary Institute. I think they changed the name just recently. It's down in Soho, near Chinatown, Little Italy. And really a great school. There's Jacques Pepin's, the dean of the students there, and there's a lot of great French chefs there, and they have a bread baking school there now, and an Italian center, and just a lot of really great teachers and professors and folks that have been in culinary their whole lives. So, yeah.
I knew your training was French. That's part of our connection. Yeah. Johnny.
Merci, Jean. Mary Beth.
So let's talk about this diverse cultural background you have. You are part Spanish, part Italian.
Yeah. Half. My dad was from Spain. My mom was from Italy. They actually met in England in school. And at the time back then, this was in the 50s, I guess, it was very rare for people from different countries to marry. And so it was, wasn't really approved of. But my family, I think both sides of the family were approving of this. And so my parents met in England, and then my dad worked at the United Nations, and he was a translator, head translator there. And so he was working in Geneva in Switzerland, and that's where I was born and stayed there almost 2 years. And then he was transferred to New York City So every other summer, part of the benefits the UN would give was to travel back to the home countries. So we would go spend several weeks in Spain, several weeks in Italy, and then almost always in between in France, where, you know, I learned a little French. And so at home, we spoke Spanish. My parents spoke Italian amongst themselves, and then they thought that we would never learn, that that would be their secret language. But of course, you know, we learned it pretty quickly. And then English was really my fourth language.
Because you also learned French.
Right. Yeah, French was actually my first language because in Switzerland, that's what was spoken. So we, you know, those were my first few words anyway.
And still, you travel back to Europe quite frequently.
Well, we had our youngest daughter, Emma, was living in Italy as a Rotary Exchange student. And so we went to visit her and meet her family's last spring. And then the year before that, my mom turned 80 and we went and had a family reunion, a big birthday party for her in northern Italy. And so I try and get back every couple of years. It's been 5 years now since I've been to Spain, and I'm really itching to go. And I'd like to go, you know, this fall if I can, or next spring. I don't know. We'll see. But
what is it about your European experience, both in how you were raised and also the travels you've done there over the years, that has shaped you the most in perhaps your culinary life?
Well, it's eating those foods, I guess, growing up on those foods. My mom was a really great chef, and my dad really loved to eat out in restaurants. So, you know, both those experiences, both those influences really play a lot on what I put on the plates that I make. I think a lot of it is family. The family that I have there, I have a lot of cousins, a lot of uncles and aunts in both Spain and Italy. And I really look forward to seeing them every time we go, and then, you know, traveling to other places because they're small countries, but they're so diverse. You know, northern Italy compared to southern Italy is a whole different country, really. And the same goes for Spain. So, yeah.
Talk about some of the dining experiences there and how that differs from life in the U.S. and perhaps even life in Colorado and Telluride. Let me just tell you where I'm getting at. You know that I lived in Paris 11 years, and a lot of my listeners know that. Well, I had never truly experienced a potluck.
Yeah.
Until I moved to Colorado, which I think is a nice concept, but that's a big difference right there.
Potlucks are great. I'll tell you a quick story about one of the first trips I took to Paris on my own with a girlfriend. I was 17 or 18 years old, still in high school. And I was learning about culinary and really starting to get interested in food arts and the culinary arts. And there was a famous restaurant called La Côte Basque, which has since closed. And they were famous for their pressed duck or something along those lines. And so I said, well, I told my girlfriend, we have to go to this restaurant. It's the place we have to go eat. I have, you know, just have to be there. And so we made reservations. We went, and you needed a jacket and tie. And of course, I showed up 17 years old, you know, pretty ignorant in jeans and sneakers and a short shirt, the way I like to dress normally. And they say, well, I'm very sorry, Mr. Girona, but we cannot accommodate you, you know, da, da, da. And so I spoke to them. I said, but I have to eat here. I have to eat here. And so they went to the closet and found me a jacket that was probably six sizes too big. And we sat down and had a great lunch. And we'll always remember that. But,
well, one of those memorable dining experiences. Do you think you've had more memorable dining experiences in Europe than in the U.S.?
I'd say no. I think there's been a lot of great restaurants I've been to in the United States as well, in New York. And, you know, I like simple food, really. I love, you know, it's been many years since I've been, but I love to go down to New Orleans and Louisiana and, you know, get some really southern food. I love that, too, down in the Carolinas and little places in Florida. It's, you know, they're fewer and far between. But I think there's still a lot of great things going on there, and there's a renaissance almost in the culinary field in the United States and California, and you know, it's really neat to see the changes that have happened in the last 20 years, I'd say.
So. And certainly those changes are quite apparent in the U.S. Do you think there's as much change happening in Europe?
I think Europe's been more in touch with their food than we have for a long, long time. And I think, you know, when you travel in Europe, you go to different regions and you could drive 100 miles and the food is completely different. The language could be completely different and the culture is very different. And the same is not so true here. But if you think about like Telluride versus Montrose, you know, then you start to look at that and say, well, yeah, it's true. You know, there could be very big differences between, you know, one place and 100 miles away here in Colorado, or the same in California, you know, Napa Valley versus Sonoma. They're very different. Are the foods very different? I don't know, but they can be, I guess.
So. In terms of the evolution of cuisine, because it seems as though both in the U.S. and in Europe and certainly other parts of the world, cuisine has become more innovative, a little bit more fusion-oriented.
Sure. Well, I think people are tired of the same old stuff, and I think people don't want to open a box and add water. And, you know, the convenience thing that came along 30, 40 years ago has its place. But I think people like real food, and they're looking for something more exciting. And I think with a lot of world travels, you know, and the openness of being able to go around the world these days, there's a lot more influence from, you know, different cultures and different cuisines being presented on people's plates.
Well, that's a terrific segue to talk about your new restaurant in Telluride Mountain Village. First, though, we'll take a little break, maybe listen to some Spanish music that you selected for us, Johnny.
How about it?
And I am also going to be putting this interview up as a podcast on my blog, BonjourColorado.com, and hopefully with a few photos of you, Johnny.
All right. We'll see if I could dig those up.
All right.
Así que te atreves a mover el culito con los caimanes de la otra orilla. Del río, donde no hay farolas, las fuentes están secas y no damos pie con bola. Ahí vivimos los caimanes, donde no hay farolas. Ahí vivimos los caimanes, sin trabajo ni glamour. Tenemos la boca grande y la mirada hacia el sur. Es por eso que cantamos mirando al sur. Oh. Es por eso que cantamos vacilando hasta la mañana esta cumbia caimanera, pa' que la baile tu hermana. Estamos en la bailanza meneando hasta la mañana esta cumbia caimanera, pa' llevarme a tu hermana.
No hay manera, no hay manera de parar la cumbia, no hay manera.
Tenemos la boca. Hello, and welcome back to Travel Fun. I'm visiting with a Telluride local, John Girona, chef, caterer, owner of the new restaurant in Telluride Mountain Village, The Village Table. We're talking about his experience in Telluride, his culinary experience, his travels, especially growing up in a multicultural family. And John, before we talk about your new restaurant, why don't you share a little bit some of your chefing experiences you've had in Telluride? Because I know you're a name that's very familiar to folks in the community.
Sure. So, like I was saying earlier, the reason I stayed in Telluride was I got a job at La Marmotte working with Bertrand and Noel. And that first winter, I was just filling in. And then I was working at a place called the Silver Glade that many of you probably remember. But Berchon and Noel invited me to be their head chef for, I was there almost 3 years in 87 through 90. And here I met my wife, Janice, and we were roommates. But anyway, after I left La Marmotte, we opened a catering business called Bread and Roses Catering, which I've had going on and off for 20 plus years now. And then shortly after that, we started that in a tiny little kitchen in Nancy and Terry Brown's basement. She had a little commercial kitchen down there, and so it was really a garage business starting from the ground up. And then we opened the Pacific Street Market, which is down where the bar there is, and that was really exciting. We had that for almost 10 years before we sold it to Dan Lynch, who now has the Brown Dog. That's where he pretty much started his Brown Dog Pizza, although it was called Pacific Street Pizza for a while there. But that was pretty exciting. It was a great learning experience. The deli, it was a tremendous amount of work, not quite as much as the restaurant, but still a lot of work, but gratifying.
And also, you've been the caterer for Telluride Blues and Brews for a number of years.
Most of the years they've been in operation. There was one or two that I did not do any catering for them. But from the very first one, we made, I think, 25 sandwiches or something right there on Main Street when they had maybe two kegs of beer. I don't remember what, but maybe there weren't even kegs. I don't know. But that's really exciting. It's a very big job. It's a month long, and we do close to 5,000 meals over the weekend. Steve does, really. So and it's really exciting because you get to feed all the musicians, and we really step it up a notch compared to most festivals. I think, you know, we give them homemade meals and you know, homemade soups and things that they don't generally get when they, you know, when they're on the road. Yeah.
Let's talk about the Village Table. It's in Mountain Village.
Yeah.
And what's the concept behind it?
Well, the Village Table came to be because I was really looking for a commercial kitchen for my catering business, and I found this space that had the restaurant in it, and for years and years I'd inquired about it because it sat there empty 5 or 6 years. It had been a restaurant, the Bistro Isabel, and they shut down after a year and a half, and then sat empty, and the owner wanted a tremendous amount of money to lease it. But then the building sold, and the new owners were much more willing to work with an operator. So we struck a deal with the landlords and got a pretty decent lease, I think, for up there. And the concept is, it's one of the taglines is global soul food. I didn't want to say I'm just doing Spanish food, I'm just doing French food, or just Italian. There's really great Italian food up there already. So I like to mix it up, and we're doing lunch and dinner and some tapas in the afternoon, and then we're open at 11 o'clock and we close around 9 or 10, and we're closed on Tuesdays. And then the other exciting thing we're doing up there is a culinary school with the in conjunction with the AHA school, and we have guest chefs coming every Tuesday, and so you could go to the AHA website and look that up. There's this week is Bud Thomas coming up, and I believe the theme of his class is summer grilling. And so we have a few other chefs teaching Indian food and Mediterranean meals and all kinds of great things. So
primarily local chefs doing demonstrations?
More hands-on than demonstration. This was something that we really wanted the students to, you know, participate in, to be in the commercial kitchen and to actually, you know, maybe stand at the stove and actually mix the ingredients instead of just a chef demo where you're watching the chef and he's talking about what he's doing. This is actually more like, hey, you jump in here, you're going to get your recipe and you're going to do it yourself.
And then do folks sit down and enjoy the meal with perhaps a glass of wine?
That is it. They'll sit down and eat what they made and, you know, talk at the table and have a glass of wine or a beer or a coffee or whatever they want.
That sounds like an excellent program.
Yeah.
Have to check it out. That makes me think about kitchen tips.
Yeah.
What would some of the tips be for, let's say, amateur chefs?
Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to burn things. Don't be afraid to cut yourself. Don't be afraid to fail. I think you need to, for an amateur chef, at home, open a lot of books, read a lot. I do a lot of reading. Every Wednesday when the dining guide comes out in the New York Times, it's the most exciting time for me. If I miss picking that up, I'm sad that whole week. I say, how did I miss that? But I have a pretty big collection of cookbooks, and Madeline Kaman, she has a book called The Making of a Cook, and it's a big encyclopedic cookbook, and pretty much that's my favorite. But, you know, people who are interested, chefs who are interested in getting in the field, my advice is to work hard, to not be afraid to, you know, to go work for very little money with the best chefs you can find, and, put in your time, because that's really what it's all about. You're not going to get to the top, or you're not going to become successful just by working in two or three restaurants. You really need to put your hours in. So, yeah.
What about the dining scene in Telluride? What are some of your thoughts about the dining scene in Telluride?
I feel we are very fortunate to have the quality of food that we have here, to have our farmers market on Friday up there in the village. We have one on Wednesday. That's just, it's just starting to get going, I think. But the quality of the produce that's just starting to come in now, from the surrounding areas, from the farmers, from the local farmers, from the, the organic farmers, and the diverse products that we get here, the Olathe sweet corn. I mean, there's so many great things that we get up here. And a lot of the chefs are using those products and making really great, plates out of them. I love to go to La Cocina. I love to go to Rustico, Siam. There's just so many great restaurants out there, just to name a few.
And it seems like there's a big camaraderie between the chefs and other workers within the restaurant scene. And
I'd say we're a pretty close-knit community. I know most of the restaurant owners, and they know what you're going through. It's a very difficult business to begin with. And on top of it, in Telluride, I think it's a little more challenging because we have the ebbs and flows, of the days you're getting crushed with 500 people walking in your door, and then there's days when you only have 35 or 25, so you really need to be willing to accept that and to work with that. And it's very difficult because you have to plan on, how much food do you order, how many people do you put on staff, and, those kind of issues. So, but one of the beautiful things about Telluride is we do have the off seasons, and we look forward to, being able to travel that time of year or take time off and relax. So I don't think I could really do what I do in a big city full time without, more of a support staff. I think, here I say, okay, well, I'll work through the summer and not take too many days off, but I will have October and November off, and I'll be able to have a little downtime.
So shoulder season is definitely both a curse and a blessing for, I think, most of us who work here. Let's get back to some favorites, Johnny. Well, first of all, some of the dishes you feature at your restaurant, I'm sure, are favorites.
Yeah,
yours.
Like the paella.
What are your signature dishes?
Sure. So the paella is one of those dishes, and it's something that I've been making in Telluride for 25 years, and have made for several catering events and weddings, and something that I learned to make at a pretty young age. My mom showed me how, and then I learned in Spain, of course. And it's one of those dishes where you can mix it up quite a bit, so it doesn't always have to be the exact same thing. But the big challenge up here is cooking at altitude and getting the rice right. It's hard enough at sea level to cook a really good paella. And then to try and do it here at altitude of 10, we're up almost 10,000 feet up there in the village, is really a challenge. And we've been working on that since we opened, and just to get it right, because the rice can become very mushy, or it can be way undercooked and not pleasant, in your mouth. So there's a fine line and a fine point where it's just exact, and precise, and we're working on that still.
And that sort of dish, I imagine people love doing that if they're going out, say, in a group, or it's very convivial.
It's a lot of times people are splitting them. A lot of times people are sharing the plates up there. The tapas are small plates. We have a whole menu of tapas small plates. That's really exciting. And, you know, we've been doing that since we opened pretty much. And they go on all night. So if you wanted to come up and just have a salad, you know, you have a salad with a piece of salmon thrown on top, we do that too. It's a good mix.
And how about favorite places to go? You know, be specific here. You regularly go to Italy, Spain, France. Tell us a couple of your gems.
There's so many places in Mexico, really, that I've been to.
You're throwing me.
Yeah. Well, there we go. But, you know, I don't know that I'd go to those places right now, though. There's been so many problems there. It's really sad. But there's places in Mexico that are real gems, I think.
Such as?
I'm going to keep that quiet. But
Okay, save that for another show.
Yeah.
How about in our favorite countries, Italy,
I'll tell you, here I love to go. In the States, I love to go to San Francisco and New York City. I think they're the greatest cities that we have here.
And you grew up in New York.
I grew up in New York, so I know it well. I still have a lot of friends there, and my mom still lives there. So I go once a year. And New York has changed a lot since I left also. But at the time in the late 80s, I was ready to leave New York, you know, and had enough. And I love to go back there for a week, sometimes 3 weeks, but typically not more than a few days. It's really, you know, just such a fast-paced, loud place that it's coming from Ophir, where I live, it's a big, big change.
But do you find yourself, whether you're going to New York or parts of Europe, do you have a little short list of restaurants that you really want to try and see what's happening at these different places, especially when it comes to chefs of a certain name?
So I do, and typically what happens is I never make it to those places. But, you know, there's so much great food in New York that you don't really need to go to those places. You know, you could read about them and see what people are doing. But typically I don't end up going to the, you know, 2 or 3 star Michelin restaurants. They're a little bit out of my pocket range. But I like to go to simple food. I love to go to Chinatown. There's restaurants down there that I've been going to for 30 years, and they're still putting out the same exact plates of food. So, yeah.
I have been visiting with John Girona. Johnny Girona, and I am going to be posting this story at my blog, bonjourcolorado.com, and you can visit the Village Table in Mountain Village, or soon the website is coming. It's on its way, and that's thevillagetablerestaurant.com, and also find the Village Table on Facebook. Johnny, thank you so much for being a guest on Travel Fun.
Thank you, Mary Beth. It's, you know, what your show is called, Travel Fun. So if you go out there and you travel, make sure you're having fun, because if you're not having fun, then it's not worth it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And food and wine is such a huge part of it.
It has to be.
And yeah. I know you do that in your cooking, and you add a lot of love, too.
Thank you.
So I wish you much success with this new venture, and have a great summer.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay.
Come on, fly with me, we'll float down in the blue.
Fly with me, float down to Peru.
In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you.
Fly.